This is Lubbock's First News. Joining us in the studio is Ambassador Tibor Nagy Jr., Vice Provost of International Affairs at Texas Tech University, and has been a deputy.
Yeah,
deputy ambassador in the area of Nigeria and whatnot. Very familiar with the terrain, the people, the customs.
Yeah, we spent some time up there, especially in the area where this is all happening.
Okay, for anyone that's been living under a rock, Boko Haram is against Western education.
Right, that's what it means.
Right, but
just for everybody or just for women?
Well, just for the...
It basically means Western education is immoral.
Period. Okay, so...
They don't want it for anybody, but especially for women.
And do they think reading and writing is Western?
As long... Basically, education should consist of studying the Quran.
Okay.
Full stop.
Okay.
Okay. So give us the lowdown and from your viewpoint. What is going on? Do we have any intelligence there? Are we just sitting around going, blah, 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 or what are we doing?
No, I don't think we're just sitting around doing that. The Nigerians desperately, desperately need somebody to help them with their intelligence, because the Nigerians are very good at sending forces that are fairly heavy-handed, and unfortunately they will end up indiscriminately doing major mayhem in the area where they're going to operate on. They're much better at the shotgun approach. Mm-hmm. What they need in this case is what I would call a laser approach of somebody going in and intercepting telephone conversations, because these bad guys are all using their cell phone up in the forest area, and figure out where they are, scope in, figure out what's going on, and then send in a small specialized force to free the girls.
So I this is what I get from you, the feeling that these guys are really not any kind of organized force. They're just a bunch of bullies with guns.
You mean Boko Haram?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. The problem is some of them have had really good training. There are indications that they've had contacts with Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. Some of these guys are really good at explosives, because they blew up a major UN facility in Abuja a couple of years ago. So they're getting operationally more capable all the time. Now, the Nigerians every now and then go in and kill a bunch of them and arrest a bunch of them, but then new ones spring up. The leadership is basically wacko. The guy who's in charge of it is a nut, much like Joseph Kony, who has the Lord's Resistance Army. The difference is Kony has taken outrageous views on Christianity. This guy takes outrageous views on Islam. But he has a group of dedicated followers. And northern Nigeria, especially that part of northern Nigeria, is rife for this kind of unhappiness. Because that part of the country is kind of abandoned by the government. It's much poorer than the rest of the country. People are much less educated. So there are a lot of grievances, an awful lot of young men who are just sitting around being angry. Mm-hmm. And you have a quote-unquote prophet like this come along, and they're very vulnerable to listening to that type of message. Mm-hmm. You know, you blame it on the West. You blame it on the Nigerian government. You blame it on everybody.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, I just had a question about, there's been some discussion about this group not being placed on the official terrorist roster Hillary Clinton, that it was requested by, the State Department, the Joint Chiefs, just whoever you could name high up in American government that could request a country or not a country, but a group.
Even the embassy can ask for it. Because when I worked at embassies in Washington, would ask our opinion. We provided, but at the end of the day, in Washington, it's an interagency process that makes that decision, basically ending up with the White House National Security Advisor.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of controversy with Boko Haram because a lot of people wanted them put on this, global terrorist list. Part of the reasoning was that once you put somebody on there, it's like being on the FBI's top 10. You also gain a lot of notoriety.
Okay.
So all of a sudden, the other major global bad guys, like Al-Qaeda.
They want to know who you are?
Or Al-Shabaab, they will take notice and want to establish links with you and support you and give you aid and assistance. People may, forget, but a couple of years ago, there was another Nigerian group that was causing mayhem, but they were in the south in the oil region called MEND.
Mm-hmm.
And the thinking in Washington was for a while that Boko Haram was kind of like a northern version of MEND.
Okay.
Until people started seeing evidence of international terror links,
mm-hmm.
that they weren't just causing mayhem in Nigeria, but now they're influencing Niger, they're influencing Mali, they're influencing Chad. So they've become a real regional menace.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the French president is, I think, organizing a meeting in Paris this Saturday mm-hmm. to get all the regional actors together.
Now, I understand the perspective, whether they, you know, what happens when they go on the official list, the
mm-hmm.
terrorist list.
Mm-hmm.
If you were making the call, and I'm just kind of curious because you understand what the dynamic is, one train of thought is, okay, if they exist, identify them, let them be bolstered and supported because that just
mm-hmm.
brings them out of the open.
Absolutely.
Or
yeah.
should we back up and just, yeah. you know, be sheepish about it? What would you do if you were making the call?
I absolutely would have put them on the list about 3 years ago. Because I think the trends were there, the direction was there, and the instant they blew up that UN compound in Abuja, it says, okay, you know, these are major international bad guys, put them on the list.
All right, we're talking with Ambassador Tibor Nagy Jr. He's Vice Provost of Foreign Affairs at Texas Tech University. We'll be back up. Lubbock's First News, Tom Sondra and Ambassador Tibor Nagy Jr., Vice Provost of Foreign Affairs, Texas Tech University, and former Deputy Ambassador in the region of Nigeria, Cameroon,
mm-hmm.
et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Boko Haram, and it's basically just, I mean, even the thuggery is, it's low-rent thuggery.
Yeah, it is, and they're mostly impacting a very, very rural, isolated part of Nigeria. Although, like I said, they have expanded their operations and they've pulled off some pretty outrageous acts in Abuja, the capital.
Now, we were talking about, is there anything real intel going on? And not really from a standpoint of internally, but we were talking about the surrounding countries,
right.
the bordering neighboring countries
right.
that are also affected here
yeah.
are about to have a series of meetings relative
right. to Boko Haram,
to
how to wipe them out. I suspect what's going to happen is that with our help and the help of like the British and the French, the governments will probably do some major damage to them, maybe not wipe them out, but they'll become pretty well like the Lord's Resistance Army in Central Africa, where they're hiding in the woods and there may be a couple of hundred of them. Because this latest incident has so outraged the world. I mean, they've been doing this kind of stuff for years.
Right.
It's just like the world doesn't notice unless there's, you know, major incident and it's impacted and there's global publicity and, you know, Mrs. Obama puts up a hashtag and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that has really focused the attention of the world, and that's when things happen.
Right.
If this had not happened, then I suspect they would have gone on for years and years and years doing the same kind of stuff. It's weird how with us in the Western world, if there are 20 people die in a ferry sinking in England, you know, it's major news for
Absolutely.
Days and days and days. But if 200 people in an African village get killed by cattle raiders, nobody even notices.
Right. Or the Malaysian jet incident that has had so much media attention,
right.
of course,
yeah.
and no reason not to, but you know, things like that happening, yeah. the numbers of people impacted are
yeah.
much greater, and then
yeah, it's almost
no
like there's
attention.
A relative value to tragedy if it happens in the West or
mm-hmm.
a country we've heard of somehow.
Sure.
It's worth, quote unquote, a lot
mm-hmm.
more than,
mm-hmm.
you know, massive disasters in unknown parts of the world.
Well, it's
mm-hmm.
not, kind of out of sight, out of mind as well. The nature of the crimes that are being committed
mm-hmm.
are mm-hmm. so heinous.
Right.
It's beyond the comprehension. People don't think it really, that human trafficking really happens.
Yeah. People don't know that there's still slavery going on in, you know, parts of the world where you may have hundreds of thousands of slaves to this day in places like Mauritania.
Mm.
So.
Okay. You know. I'm going to have to buzz in. Where is Mauritania, Alex?
Mauritania is on the northwest coast of Africa, right above Senegal. It's a pretty large country. It's about as big as, it's next to Niger, and next to that is Mali, and next to that is Chad. But it's that string of fairly very large countries
mm-hmm.
that part of them are the Sahara Desert, part of them are what we would call like West Texas scrub.
Mm-hmm.
But they call it the Sahel. So, but it's a huge country.
So the terrain in that area more resembles like the big country, the rough country down
exactly.
Spur Post.
Exactly. Or think just the Caprock area. Because where they have these girls, it's some pretty heavy-duty scrub forest, very thick, but it's not like the jungle canopy you think of, you know, with Tarzan.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a group of very rugged mountains on the Nigeria-Cameroon border with lots and lots of caves. So it's typical badlands, but not a lot of rainfall. Just maybe 2 or 3 months a year do they get rainfall. So it's not, when they say forest, it's not these huge trees that we think of in Oregon or Washington.
Okay, my mind kind of drifted off into some areas that you know, are logistics that mm-hmm. I'm just kind of curious about.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing when he said that. 50 of the girls supposedly have escaped. Think about that terrain and trying to escape.
I think those 50 escaped during the capture probably,
or right after. Okay. Yeah,
I think now it would be extremely difficult for the girls to escape and to find their way home to get water.
Well, and they said they thought about 20 had died. Well, you know, maybe those 20 died that were shot in the back trying to escape.
Mm-hmm. Well, or just from lack of water, disease, because the water's not clean. You don't have, you know, access to real food. It is extremely, extremely tough. That's why I think that it's going to have to take some very precise special forces. Find, identify, and go in.
Logistically, mm-hmm. you see these guys talking up, and their primary means of communication is the cell phone.
Absolutely.
So that's one way that we would find them and track them down.
Yeah.
But, okay, in the middle of nowhere, if they're always on their cell phones, you know that there's not current to plug into. How do they, I mean, do they have a base of operations? Do they have that sophisticated of equipment?
Well, it's not really sophisticated, but you can plug those into car batteries.
Well, yeah, I get that.
They do have quite a bit. They have stolen vehicles. They've stolen mm-hmm. buses. Like when they came to steal the girls, that was a very sophisticated operation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they showed up with a lot of vehicles, and they were there
heavily
for about
armed.
3 or 4 hours. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, the Nigerian forces up there were incapable of responding.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're just not good at quick, you know, mm-hmm. reaction. But then, of course, look at Benghazi.
Mm.
You know, we weren't exactly stellar in responding to what was going on in Benghazi.
Well, response.
The element of surprise.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. We were talking about perhaps liberating the captured girls
mm-hmm.
and sending in a small force.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Realistically, how big is the force? Do we know exactly how big their force is on the ground? How many people?
They'll probably typically have a couple of hundred, you know, armed, various levels of training. But remember also, I'm sure this is probably not being publicized, but I suspect that there's heavy duty negotiations going on in the background. Because remember, I mentioned that there's some northern Nigerian politicians who are opposed to the president of Nigeria who probably have their own contacts with these groups. So they could be talking in the background to try to figure something out.
So if we send in a small force and to take these people out, is this going to be one of those things where we're just picking them off on the perimeter and moving closer, 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 closer? Or is this going to be just like a wham bam?
It would have to be overrunning the camp pretty mm-hmm. well to keep the mm-hmm. girls from being injured.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I guess we're going to know more after the perimeter countries meet.
Absolutely. And we'll see what happens after Saturday.
All right. You're about to go off to China, yes?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
All right. Be careful when you're traveling.
Thanks a lot. Great to be here.
Appreciate you coming in, man.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Look forward to your report.
That's Ambassador T. Bornage Jr.